It's time for Supply Chain Now Radio, sponsored by Apex Atlanta and Talent Stream. Broadcasting live from the supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia, Supply Chain Now Radio spotlights the best in all things supply chain. The people, the companies, the technologies, the best practices, and the critical issues of the day. Now, here are your hosts.
Thank you, Katie. Great to be back today after a busy weekend hosting supply chain leaders here in Atlanta. This is Scott Luton with Supply Chain Now Radio. And we've got some exciting news today for our listeners. So today's show kicks off a new series on Supply Chain Now Radio where we're going to be focusing more on technology industry, especially technology in supply chain. We're going to be speaking with three leaders from organizations doing big things in the Metro Atlanta community and beyond, especially in supply chain. We're going to say hello to them in just a minute. But first, let's say good morning to my talented co-host, Ashley Liebke. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Scott.
CEO and president of Vision Media Group and co-host of our new series, Focus on Technology. Ashley, glad you're back.
I made it through the first time. I'm glad to be here.
Five-star guest first time around. So glad to have you as a co-host here today. And we've got some fantastic guests lined up for this new series we're kicking off. So tell us, we also saw each other at the Georgia Manufacturing Summit, right? Where we had speakers from Gulfstream and Thrush Aircraft and Kumho Tire, Georgia, Southwire, a lot of folks talking about all the exciting things taking place in manufacturing. Well, any key observations, takeaways from that big gathering?
That was a good one. I was very fortunate to be able to participate in the Georgia Manufacturing Summit and be a part of the Show Me 50 booth, of course, with a special guest we've had on the show a couple times, Elba Parade Gallagher. And what was a big takeaway, of course, was the tech focus. And that's why I'm here. And that's why we're bringing this focus on the show to technology. It seems like technology has really infiltrated every industry, every aspect, whether you're in marketing like me or sourcing like David and risk management like Roger and all the exciting things happening with blockchain with our guest Linda, who we're going to be introducing. So I think the most exciting thing, though, was your panel. We've been seeing a lot of buzz about the panel that you led with some Georgia companies and the challenges that they're facing, particularly around managing just huge amounts of data and just connecting the dots with disruptions in supply chain. So I know over the next several months, we'll be talking a lot about that.
And we'll have those folks on the show as well. We hosted a Trends of Track and Supply Chain panel with Legility, Southwire, Kumho Tire, and Descartes. And great show there. Again, great guest, great show. It was easy panel to moderate. Speaking of guests, let's introduce today's featured guest here on Supply Chain Now Radio. We're going to be leading off with Roger Duncan, co-founder and vice president of product and development for Risk Connect. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning, Scott. We are really thrilled to be here with the panelists today and look forward to some great conversations around some of the innovations that are going on related to supply chain.
Love it. I always love talking innovation. Thanks for being here. David Landsman, Global Vice President and General Manager with SAP Ariba. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Scott. Thanks so much for having me.
Glad you're here. And then Linda Goetz, president of the Blockchain Chamber of Commerce. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning. So happy to be here and sharing the combination of blockchain and the other technologies helping supply chain be better.
Well, you know, we haven't had one episode where blockchain wasn't mentioned probably 1,000 times. So we've got a fantastic guest with Linda Goetz, who's all about the blockchain and the blockchain community. So glad you're here. Looking forward to dive into that more.
Thank you.
All right, so Ashley, we're going to kick off where we'd like to start. There's lots of things happening in supply chain, but tell us, you know, some of the top things to know in supply chain now.
Well, the killer thing about being a co-host on this show is that I don't have to be the smartest person in the room. I get to pass it over. But, you know, there are so many interesting things happening and trends, not just in Georgia, but nationally. We're seeing a lot of changing landscapes, new technologies. One thing I've been looking at lately, and thanks to some smart people over at UPS that have pointed me in the direction, they call it VUCA environments, things that are
volatile. V-U-C-A.
V-U-C-A.
Yeah.
And that means volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. And that probably resonates with people listening right now. You know, that just feels like you know, not only every day 9 to 5, but when we go home, the way we use technology, some things we, you know, just don't understand. And I know for myself, as somebody who's been involved in technology for decades, I just get flummoxed almost on a daily basis with the way things work. And so I think helping with usability and, you know, throw in there some disruptive changes. It's interesting that VUCA environment thing was coined by the War College, but it's something that's now infiltrating our thinking as we look at how we design solutions and work within business. So it pulls together this, you know, risk in business, the blockchain, and sourcing. You know, who are you doing business with? And those are really hot topics right now.
Hot. And there will be a vocabulary quiz later to our guests about VUCA and what that stands for. So, but yeah, risk, blockchain, sourcing, really hot topics. And that'll be a big part of what we talk about here today. So let's talk about in the food supply chain, Ashley. What are you seeing there?
Well, some of our favorite stores, Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, I think even Walmart had another set of challenging food recalls this week. And they were so massive that the disruption to their supply chain on not just the inbound logistics side, but in the retail environment, how store associates have to deal with suddenly having to change what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. So the ability for managers and executives to get the more value out of their human resources along the lines with also trying to move product and inventory can be really challenging. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with that. All of that product coming back into facilities has to be managed. So I think the smart people, the data scientists are really coming up with solutions to these VUCA and disruptive, challenging environments. So it's exciting to see how we compute around these type of episodes.
Absolutely. And then we already mentioned the Georgia Manufacturing Summit. That was certainly on the radar here in the hashtag Supply Chain City. We had about 800 people come out. Jason Moss and the Georgia Manufacturing Alliance, a big friend of the show, big friend of Apex Atlanta. And it was really neat to see the leader. You know, everyone's probably heard of Gulfstream jets. I'm not sure how many people in this room have one. Maybe. I do not. But they're big. They've got 33 facilities down in Savannah. Aerospace is a huge export coming out of Georgia. And to hear their president kind of talk about the culture and talk about, you know, how even in that business model where you're making $70 million jets, nothing's taken for granted. And the intense laser focus on culture and hiring their team and of course, their customers. And if you're going to pay $70 million for a jet, everything better work, right? But that was, he was a headliner. David Byrne, I want to say, is the president's name of Gulfstream. And then Thrush Aircraft was the other keynote. Thrush produces agricultural aircraft. They used to go by a different name, you know, a couple of decades ago, but agriculture aircraft, which, you know, in agriculture is such an important component of Georgia industry. And then some of the technology, you know, bringing it back home, some of the technology, the drone technology, the some of what they're applying in that business was pretty neat. So to hear a leader from Thrush Aircraft based right here in Georgia talk at the summit was really cool.
One thing I was noticing was how they were trying to just harness so much data in the production process. Looking back at supply and demand, their customer challenges, and where they drive their product direction, their entire business is based on, right now on innovation in jet, private aircraft, and they're killing it in the country. And I love how there's a big private-public partnership. They're really working with the state in terms of leveraging real estate, human resources, training. These are long-term plans and things for the country, the state and the country that are really are taking on kind of 10, 15-year projections. So exciting to see that they're trying to enable an entire new workforce. But, you know, again, back to the data, they're trying to harness the data not only around the product, the jet, its performance at every single level in real time, but also about their employees and all the touch points. You have to measure now every single transaction or transfer of any data or a physical good. So physical and digital worlds collide once again, and trying to bring that all together is challenging for everybody. So we're here to sort of flesh some of that out today.
That's right. For non-technologist like myself, I like how Linda or Ashley mentioned not being the expert in the room. If I've done anything really well in through the first 25 episodes, it's not being the expert in the room. So glad we've got a sharp panel around us to talk more about some of the technological advances, innovation. So one quick note before we move to your next point, Ashley. We are having Jason Moss, who founder and CEO of the Georgia Manufacturing Alliance, who hosted the summit, on the show on November 9th. So looking forward to hearing what's next at the GMA. All right. So you talked on data scientists and supply chain, right? Anything else? What else would you like to add to that category?
You know, just that we're going through very fast changing complexity, and Roger will probably touch on not only the risk of touching different systems, having all different entities involved, and different technologies. I've seen things like JSON, REST, YAML, SAML. We've diverged from XML. So
was that English?
Yeah, the regular, you know, business person is really having to understand a lot of things that go over our heads. So let's get forward and talk more about how we can manage risk with all those different points of intersection.
Ashley, we'll try to demystify that for you today.
Oh, terrific. We will take all the demystification as we can get, Roger. Terrific. And then you already touched on sourcing, but, you know, risk is a hot risk management. It's tip of the tongues for many folks, especially in the corporate environment. And then sourcing, creative sourcing strategies is really hot. Talk to us about sourcing, Ashley.
Well, you know, sourcing is sort of looking to change potentially. You know, I've known David for many, many years, back to when he was at MFG.com and I was at UPS, and we're just trying to find ways of easier matchups, matchmaking, the source and the demand, the buyer and the supplier. So there's more public-private partnerships. What we're seeing from the U.S. Census is in the first half of 2018, the value of shipments, the orders happening between buyers and suppliers is steadily increasing, and that trend is matching in the manufacturing sector. So we know that shipping is increasing as a factor of just doing business, and so just working out all of those logistics between your partners. The Institute for Future says that trust is one of the biggest issues in 2018. So how do you find the best partners is a big question.
Huge question. And everyone's looking for, you know, some of the curveballs coming our way, whether it's customer demands on delivery time frame, same day delivery. We mentioned drones earlier. Of course, you've got cybersecurity concerns. We heard a lot about that on Saturday. Everyone's looking for not only the best partners, but new partners to make sure that they can meet these demands, these increased demands in today's supply chain. So I'm looking forward to hearing, you know, talking more about, you know, risk and sourcing and blockchain today. So on that note, on the hot topic of risk, I want to introduce our first guest today here on Supply Chain Now Radio. We welcome Roger Duncan, co-founder and vice president of product and development for Risk Connect. Risk Connect is the only provider of true integrated risk management solutions. They've got a bevy of awards. I was cherry picking a couple earlier that that we were talking about. Top 25 GRC tech solutions provider by CIO Applications,
correct?
Great publication. And then for the fifth year in a row, Risk Connect was a Pacesetter Award winner, which is really focused on growth, especially here in Atlanta. So you're on quite a ride here, Roger.
Well, we appreciate those kind words, Scott. But really, quite frankly, we're really focused on our customers and really trying to do what we believe is some of the industry best practices in delivering some of the best solutions.
Well, I would not sit in your seat for a minute, because risk in supply chain, risk management, supply chain, risk mitigation, you know, we hear it almost daily. You know, being part of the APEX community, supply chain managers, supply chain leaders, we're all figuring out how to best mitigate and manage the risk. So let's talk about the current state of supply chain risk. And what are some emerging trends that you're seeing in the marketplace?
Great, Scott. And quite frankly, we could spend a whole day on this particular topic. It's challenging. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we focus on at Risk Connect, and by the way, my commentary is really around through the lens of risk, as we see supply chain, how we support the supply chain domain, we really focus on how we can help manage and mitigate the risk in a lot of different areas. One of the biggest areas is around cyber risk, obviously. We have, the numbers, Scott, are anywhere from 60 to 80% of cyber breaches involve a third party. And it depends on who you're asking. But I think the way that you start analyzing those numbers, if you look at third party, fourth party, as the supply chain gets very 3D and 4D complex, you can get into some very high numbers as it relates to kind of the responsibility of where some of those root causes of those cyber events occurred. And so at Risk Connect, we're really focused around vendor risk, and we provide an application to help our customers address vendor risk management. And there's really three things that I think are a part of vendor risk. A lot of people think that, vendor risk is all about cyber. It's about things like high-tech type of devices that are going to help mitigate these risks. And it couldn't be the opposite, really. There's really three things. It's a cultural aspect, it's a strategic aspect, and it's also, lastly, a technical aspect of really how we approach vendor risk. So, that's kind of our approach as it relates to talking to our customers and prospects around the opportunities of vendor risk.
So you mentioned cybersecurity, backing up a little bit. And Saturday we had a speaker, Tanya Allen with IT Gressa Consulting, come out and give an overview to about 55 or so supply chain professionals from the APICS community. And really, if you look at the APICS events that have been going on for 6 years, very few have been dedicated to cybersecurity, which is such a huge risk in supply chain. She talked about how just passwords, a lot of folks out there that wish harm and they're looking to take advantage of weak passwords. They've got, algorithms that can, a billion passwords, in an hour's time to crack the code and break into supply chains. Right.
That's right, Scott. And Ashley, I'll demystify this one for you. So I'll use 2FA, two-factor authentication. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we recommend, regardless if we're talking about vendor risk management, really any part of a cyber risk aspect. We want all of our systems really at minimum sort of protected and have that level of security posture around two-factor authentication.
So if the world is owned by Microsoft and Google, I think it is. if you are in two-factor authentication.
Jeff B. has something to say about that.
I know. But if you're in that world and you're an employee, what would you have beyond a computer if you don't have a work device? Is that a new question that the company has to now configure? What does two-factor authentication require?
You open up a can of worms, Ashley, because now we start getting into things like bring your own device to work.
Oh, yeah.
And we also get into things like IoT devices and personal IoT devices, wearables, where a lot of your workforce and supply chain, they're going to be using wearable devices. And now we open up ourselves to even more opportunities to manage risk.
There's a lot of open doors for breach there, especially if you're bouncing around your AT&T or your Xfinity backup Wi-Fi or Bluetooth.
And Scott, just to address your question about passwords, what we've seen over the past probably 6 or 7 years with, you've seen these major events occur certainly in the mainstream media. But what's happened is that most of these are not high-tech events. It's not something where they have installed a piece of a chip or any kind of high-tech, low-level operating system bug in the system to give this data up. It's usually something relatively simple, as you mentioned. It's what we call it through the front door with passwords.
So Jack Allen with Cisco was also there Saturday. They've got a great new video, and I'm probably going to botch the story. But to your point, the simple stuff, a manufacturing organization had several members that were in a bowling league, and folks that were trying to break in and take advantage, they identified that through social media. They were able to break into a very simple – the bowling alley had a very simple, straightforward, low – not very complicated website. They broke into that, accessed their – league accounts, and then ultimately were able to get into the companies, the manufacturing companies, mainframes and databases that way, which is scared the heck out of me, right? How folks can all connect the dots. But anyway, I'm getting way off subject. But going back to what Roger was saying, so your approach, RiskConnect's approach, is cultural, strategic, and technical when it comes to how you help your clients maximize their risk management. So let's talk about supply chain vendors. How do they factor in supply chain risks?
So, you know, there are so many devices now. We have, you know, everything the vendor has, whether it be third, fourth party, other relationships that the vendors have, they're really those are your devices. You can, although these particular third parties have their own ability to provide risk management techniques and provide some level of mitigation, but it's really up to you as the as kind of the key party to make sure to have those individuals, those companies, attest to all of the things that should be doing and they should be doing in terms of best practices. And we can get into a lot of the technical things around firewalls and VPNs and things of that nature. But what I want to stress today, there's a lot of focus on the technical and tactical.
Right.
But what we're finding is that a lot of our solutions reach out to the third party vendors and ask them to attest to certain regulations. They ask them to attest to certain audit protocols. There's a lot of that sort of interaction with the customer that is not technical or tactical, that really is providing a lot of value. And that goes to what I mentioned before, Scott, around being strategic about this. Certainly, we have to have technical capabilities, and there's a tactical operational approach to vendor risk management. But there's also the approach of having attestations and meeting certain levels of regulation. I should also mention that in the product world, we have something called MVP, which we call minimal viable product. I would also suggest to you today that having a third party attest to a regulation is probably not enough. It might be the minimal viable regulation that you're attesting to, but really what we're seeing is we need to go beyond some of those minimal levels of best practices to really accommodate maybe your unique needs as what you're trying to address in your supply chain.
That sounds a little bit, you're like getting into the area of values and ethics and maybe back to that trust factor a little bit.
It is. And if you're going to think that through, Ashley, you have to bring up corporate social responsibility, right? Really. And quite frankly, that is a big topic today. One of the things that, companies are sort of measured, their DNA is kind of around how the public looks at them from a corporate social responsibility aspect.
CSR.
Yeah.
Everything's so transparent because of the media, so we have to be really careful. I think some of the risk we've seen is it can even be in how your C-levels speak in public, can become a PR risk and different things. And those are behaviors that sometimes have to be managed.
It is. It is, actually.
It's a changing world.
It is. And it's not only your C-suite executives, but I would suggest also it's all the way down to your operational rank and file throughout your company, because a lot of times, the voice of someone in your company can be just as loud as your C-suite individuals on social media.
That's a good point. That's a great point. And they in effect become the figureheads or the communication experts. Well, moving past CSR, which is a hot topic, we're not going to be able to give that justice today. But let's talk about something that we're unfortunately, in the last month or so, a couple months, with Hurricanes Florence and Michael. Most importantly, disrupting all the communities and the residents of these cities in North Carolina and South Carolina and Florida and parts of Georgia, for sure, South Georgia. But, from a supply chain standpoint, it's also been very disruptive to supply chain. So if we're speaking to our APICS community, our supply chain managers and leaders, when it comes to disasters, what are some best practices that risk managers or supply chain leaders can follow?
So, you know, as we talk about vendor risk, and we haven't brought up business continuity planning or business continuity management today, but that certainly plays into the whole area of help managing risk around disasters and helping reduce supply chain risk as it relates to that. And if you think about it, it's almost a continuum. So we're providing risk mitigation. We're trying to assess risk. We're doing all we can do pre disaster. But then there's a whole series of activities that follow after that disaster, and that's oftentimes where your business continuity plans are now being put into place. And one of the things that's very interesting is that, you know, if you look at what's going on down in the Gulf or up in North Carolina, Virginia, Wilmington area, what people don't realize is that these things have long lasting impacts to supply chain. You know, we're going to bring things back online. We're going to get the routes and the connectivity, the technology back in place, but there's almost a latency and a ripple effect that begins to cascade, and it takes some time to unwind all of that that backlog of information and supply chain issues.
Yep. So again, we could dedicate a week's show to what Risk Connect does and the topic of risk assessment, risk management, risk mitigation. But let's as we kind of wrap up here with Roger, you know, what are some Risk Connect solutions that can be used to improve supply chain risk management?
So really, too, we've touched on already that we have a vendor risk management application that many of our customers are very excited about, and it helps really stay connected. It's almost a sort of a continuous connectivity solution where it's not on an annual basis where we do an assessment. It's more of a real time. As things change, we begin to reach out and think about how your vendors are reacting to certain risks that are emerging and how you help manage that. So that's certainly one of the things that that we help also business continuity planning, where it's really important to make sure that you have the plans in place. It's also very important to make sure that those plans are tested and socialized throughout the organization. It's not enough to do a tabletop exercise. It's really today with the kind of disasters, the kind of events we're seeing, it is broad-based. It is permutating throughout the entire organization and making sure that everyone is really almost muscle memory on how to address these events.
And as exciting as it is with emerging technology and supply chain, what goes hand in hand with that is the emerging risk that you talk to. And so how often are you advising companies, how often are they revisiting their business continuity planning and their risk assessment? How often is that continuous?
I think the best practice is to be as real time as possible. Obviously, there's some limitations there, but really having that culture around the real time approach is very important. It's not enough to exercise it, you know, once a year.
Sounds like you've kind of demystified it for me. It's back to formalizing our protocols, good documentation, good human interaction, so everybody on the team understands what the plan is to go forward and then can execute in a real nimble way. Is kind of a departure from technology, but it just points to the, you know, again, the importance of us as people to work together and collaborate, and everybody to have a little bit more transparency into what they should be doing.
Right. And I know it's a little bit countercultural for a technology person to be saying that, look, technology is important, but also the strategic aspect and that human interaction is really important as well.
Well, I'm going to engage Risk Connect to come out to Walton County. I've got three kids that are getting more digital as we speak, and I bet my emerging risk is taking off. So hopefully y'all do private business as well. We'll have an assessment out there in Loganville.
Be happy to, Scott.
So to learn more about Roger Duncan and Risk Connect, you can check them out at riskconnect.com. And that's RISKONNECT. You can also find Roger Duncan on LinkedIn. Any other avenues that folks, any speaking engagements coming up or any other social media shout outs you want to give?
Well, I will tell you, in the past week or so, we've had our Risk Connect Users Conference. We brought in 300 global companies and really had a session around voice of the customer. And a lot of the things that we've talked about today are directly from those global companies and some of their challenges. And it's been helpful. And we really rely on our customers to give us feedback and really understand what's going on the ground.
Terrific. Well, pleasure to have you in the studio with us. Roger Duncan, co-founder and vice president of product and development for Risk Connect. Thanks for your time, Roger.
I love your LinkedIn picture,
Thanks, Scott. I get so many comments on that, and I need to change that, Ashley.
No, that's everybody's got to go there.
But I love it. All right, good stuff. Thank you, Roger. So as promised, as Ashley kind of teed us up, from risk to now into sourcing and e-sourcing and procurement, we are featuring David Landsman. Good morning, Global VP and GM for SAP Ariba here on Supply Chain Now Radio. SAP Ariba, as many of you know, global leader in source-to-pay solutions. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
Doing great. Glad you were here. Enjoyed our warm-up conversation about the Jets and the United and Mercedes-Benz Stadium. You name all the important stuff.
All
right?
The important stuff, indeed.
So we talked with Roger a little bit, or at least implied, you know, supply chain disruption. You know, what are you seeing, and what are you seeing companies, how are they insulating themselves from all the disruption that's out there in the marketplace now?
Well, you can never really insulate yourself from all the disruption that's taking place, but supply chain continuity planning is probably one of the most critical aspects to the modern supply chain. And when you're looking at supply chain risk globally, it's a cross-functional conversation. Everyone has to have a seat at the table. Technology, finance, supply chain procurement, they all need to come together and develop a continuity plan for the unforeseen. You can't plan for a once-in-a-thousand-year event, but generally speaking, you understand that you're going to suffer a disruption at some point. And there are different ways of looking at that. Marsha McLennan released a report recently that says 68% of all supply chain disruption is due to supplier insolvency of some kind.
Wow.
So if you aren't managing, at least getting transparency into the financial risk of your supply chain, then you're missing a key component to supply chain risk management and continuity planning. When you look at the tsunami, right, after the earthquake in Sendai and tsunami in northern Japan, we worked with an industrial distributor that actually lost 15% of their global supply chain.
Wow.
Right, multi-billion-dollar industrial distributor, and it wasn't like, oh, after the storm subsides, you know, these businesses will
back to normal,
will reopen. Right. They were at the bottom of the Pacific, and you know, so they came to me at my previous company, and we hear stories like this at SAP Ariba all the time, where I need to pivot to a new supplier, and when you need to pivot to a new supplier, you know, as using the sports metaphor, speed kills.
Yep.
Right? Because let's say you're in the automotive industry, you're a tier one automotive supplier, your down tier supply chain has been disrupted due to a hurricane or a tsunami or an earthquake or whatever,
sure,
a blizzard.
Yep.
If you shut down, you know, a prime line, the fine is $1 million a day against your contract.
Absolutely.
Right? So for a tier one automotive supplier, that's an untenable situation. They cannot fail to deliver. So one of the great things about the solutions like SAP Ariba Discovery or B2B marketplaces in general is that they allow you to tap into open capacity and available stock in real time, right? So, you know, if all of a sudden you need to replace, you know, 200 hours a month of machining time, you can identify that rapidly.
Rather than go through the hurdles of traditional sourcing, making
Absolutely.
Calls and checking out Google and all that stuff, it brings it to your fingertips.
Absolutely. It's actually reverses the sourcing process. The traditional sourcing process is doing a bunch of supplier identification research and then reaching out to the suppliers to see if they're interested. The way that B2B e-commerce marketplaces like SAP Ariba Discovery work is you're standing up on a table and shouting into a huge community of suppliers and saying, hey, I need, you know, 50,000 widgets delivered to Butte, Montana by, you know, 3 weeks from next Thursday. Can you do it? Okay. And then the suppliers that can raise their hand. Mm. And so you're compressing the sourcing timeline. Another interesting thing about the value of B2B e-commerce marketplaces in general is that the community validates the supplier. So we're never going to replace the supplier due diligence process, but we give companies that are in an emergent situation the ability to rapidly accelerate the supplier vetting, which is incredibly important when managing risk.
Huge. Yeah. Huge.
And I'm sure when Linda talks later, she's going to talk about the value of the community validating things on the block. Right. That's one of the key
social validation.
Yeah, key value propositions of blockchain and why some of the first commercial applications of blockchain are going to be in the supply chain space.
Absolutely. Disintermediate it. Get right in there. Right?
Absolutely. So there's in terms of disruption, you're starting to look at legal compliance being a key component of the supply chain. There are know your supplier laws being passed in almost every state. Driving slavery out of the supply chain is a critical aspect of both, you know, corporate social responsibility.
Consumer demands it.
And supply chain risk management.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And brand risk, right? Brand risk is a key component to supply chain management.
Huge.
Now. And, it probably in the last 5 years, it might be the most important thing.
So go ahead.
Please.
So we talked earlier, SAP Ariba Discovery, which is one platform really driving these resources at your fingertips, speed kills. I like that football analogy. Let's talk about the second platform, OMX. So it offers a little different of a resource. Tell us about OMX.
So Ashley was talking earlier about public-private partnership. And so if you are a contractor to a government, any government, you very often have to show compliance in your contract offsets. Almost every United States federal government contract requires a 25% offset to what we consider protected class suppliers, whether they be women-owned, veteran-owned, historically underutilized businesses, minority-owned, that type of thing. So OMX is a platform that allows you to measure government contract offset compliance at the program level, right? Mm-hmm. Really managing your contract risk. It also measures your down-tier supply chain economic impact. One of the cool things that we do as sourcing and supply chain professionals is we provide an enormous amount of value on both sides of the equation. For the purchasing company, right? We provide, you know, cost savings, risk mitigation planning. Mm-hmm. Okay. That allows them to reinvest in their business, keep people employed, you know, hire more people. So there's substantial economic impact around that. On the supplier side, when they win a nice contract, right, they invest in equipment. They hire a second shift, right? So the social good of the economic impact is important, and it's important to measure it so you can talk about it and understand the good that your company is doing, down tier. And OMX is a fantastic platform that allows companies to manage that pretty easily.
Mm. So you mentioned earlier an automotive company related to the situation they were in related to a tsunami. You've got another story, I understand, about a large recognizable automotive company that was mapping their supply chain. Tell us about that.
So spend visibility and mapping the supply chain to the nth degree is something that most large manufacturers are tasked with. Ford Motor Company found that in their steel supply chain from Brazil, there were some slave labor produced materials. I think this was 2007. I could be off by a year or two. But they mapped their supply chain 7 layers deep, right? About 90% of companies do not map their supply chain beyond tier one. They do not know who supplies their suppliers. Supply chain visibility is critically important to managing brand risk and managing operational supply chain risk. Also, it gives you the ability to understand where you're paying maybe too many profit margins and you can aggregate some spend. So think about managing a supply chain 7 tiers down. That means that Ford is paying a profit margin to 7 companies.
Huge blind spot, too. I mean, the folks struggle with the one layer deep supply chain, but 7, there's...
Now, I can't tell you who this is, but I was in a conversation with a very large defense contractor, and I'm talking to their sourcing and procurement guys, And the conversation kind of came around, and you know, they were like, "Well, you know, we're happy with the way we do our supply, you know, with our supply chain." I'm like, "Come on, you guys buy $20 billion worth of components every year, and you overpay for about 80% of them." And they didn't really disagree, right? They didn't really disagree. They didn't, you know, they didn't say no. They kind of, yeah, they kind of laughed, shrugged their shoulders and said, yeah, this is how we do business, you know? So, and that was a good while ago. And that kind of cavalier attitude towards spending, you know, in the procurement space is not sustainable. So, you know, this company has had to make changes, especially if they're going to maintain their large defense contracts. Mm.
So from defense to caffeine, which gets us all going in the morning, let's talk coffee.
Indeed.
You've got another anecdote. And you know, this show is about stories. Stories illustrate all the points, the best practices, and all the terms and acronyms that are supply chain. Let's talk coffee, though.
This is a story about brand risk.
That's right.
Okay, because, you know, this company did not have multi-billion-dollar multinational food provider based in Europe. They did not have down-tier visibility into their supply chain, and they were forced to admit publicly that they had no idea where their beans were coming from.
Wow.
And, you know, the unfortunate circumstance was when they finally did get visibility, they realized that it was largely slave labor that was producing the down-tier beans that eventually made it into the coffee that they were selling in grocery stores. That kind of brand risk is unacceptable in the 24-hour news cycle that we live in right now, because that, you know, by the time you figure out there's a problem, your brand is taking massive damage. Yep.
And so and there's lots of different options and resources out there that companies can use, but by using OMX and SAP Ariba Discovery and some of the other products and services that your company offers, you can help mitigate these risks, right?
Absolutely.
And kind of see the path going ahead, the right path ahead, right?
Absolutely. SAP also has a solution, SAP Ariba Supplier Risk Insights, which, you know, does a lot of this, you know, kind of brand management, real-time, you know, news monitoring and things like that. It has a financial component. So if one of your suppliers shows up in a lawsuit, there's a notification. You know, the 24-hour news cycle requires 24-hour management of your supply chain, because you never know when one of your suppliers is going to put you at risk. If you aren't managing it, and if you aren't managing it, by the time you find out, it's too late.
So, trusting in big part of trust is your ability, the visibility, right? And knowing who you're dealing with, knowing where you're getting your materials and supplies, and then knowing a problem, being able to act to make changes as you need to, right? And it sounds like that's a big thrust of what SAP Ariba is helping companies to do.
Certainly, the discovery solution helps companies do that. You know, by compressing the sourcing timeline, by giving you the ability to access 3.5 million suppliers with just, you know, filling out a very short form and clicking submit. It's an extremely valuable tool. What would take a normal sourcing and procurement team a month, SAP Ariba Discovery can do in a week.
Wow.
Because you're tapping into open, and there's an interesting ancillary benefit, right? With 3.5 million suppliers covering over 22,000 categories, and the ability to tap into open capacity and stock in real time and available stock in real time, you're generally the pricing that you get back from the suppliers is what the market will bear for that commodity at this moment in time. Mm. So in addition to risk management, it's also a live benchmarking engine, which is another risk component. Am I overpaying? Am I underpaying? Mm. Do I have an optimal supply situation? Should I take something that I buy tactically and lock it into a long-term contract? Right. These are questions that your best in class supply chain professionals are asking themselves on a day to day basis. So there's, you know, a number of outcomes when you're looking at a new source of supply. Right. The pricing that you get back is much higher than what you're currently paying. You find you have an optimal supply situation and you decide to lock it into a long term contract. You know, the pricing comes back right with what you're already paying with your current supplier. Mm. So maybe you decide not to investigate supplier change, or the pricing that comes back is much, much lower. And you have to then investigate the risk of supplier change, because supplier change is a risk, right?
And that's huge.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the great things about the SAP Ariba Discovery and the Ariba network of 3.5 million suppliers is that we give you, through the supplier's profile, visibility into their activity on the network. So like I said before, we're never going to replace the due diligence process, but when you see that a supplier has 20 transacting relationships on the Ariba network, you know, and you know they've transacted billions and billions of dollars in business through a tool like SAP Ariba, then you realize, okay, I still have to get an audit. I still have to put them through an IT security audit. I still have to do my normal stuff. But you know what? It's highly likely that this supplier, you know, is a viable supplier for my supply chain.
You know, kind of one of the themes that we'll be developing through this show, you know, the ability to make decisions, but make them quickly based on not just data, but good data, right? Good, trusted, credible data so that folks have confidence to make decisions. And in today's supply chain, to your point, David, it is 24/7, right? And while a lot of folks lose sleep, I'm waiting for a robot that I can just kind of hook up all my stuff to so I can get a good 8 hours and everything keep moving ahead. But it's 24/7. It's 24/7. And the ability, it sounds like a lot of what you do, you provide the information, the credible information, so decisions can be made quickly to keep up with how supply chain is moving today. To learn more, David, Ariba.com, right?
Actually, to use Ariba Discovery, because it's free to use for buying companies, you can go right to ArebaDiscovery.com and register for an account and start doing supplier identification today. If you want to reach out to me, I'm available on LinkedIn, Twitter, Carrier Pigeon, Smoke Signal.
Good, you'll fit right in.
Yeah, well, I'm so fairly accessible.
I don't want to gloss over that fact. So you can use Ariba, buying customers can use Ariba Discovery at no charge.
No charge.
So that is ArebaDiscovery.com, A-R-I-B-A, Discovery.com. And David Landsman, Global VP and General Manager for SAP Ariba, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks,
folks,
David.
Folks can reach you at LinkedIn.
I'm at David I. Landsman on Twitter.
Okay.
That's my professional Twitter. I have a personal one where I talk about the United all the time.
Yes, and I was about to say they can also connect with you in person at every United game, right?
Well, I try to go as much as I can. Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. David Landsman with SAP Ariba.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you. All right, Ashley, we are moving at light speed, huh?
This is fantastic. What an amazing panel today, because I can see like all the shows into June. We can talk about the 3D printing and what AI brings to the picture and the robots and everything. So demystifying all of this really complex topics, this is fun.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you think of risk sourcing and blockchain, you don't necessarily go straight to us like peanut butter and jelly. It goes perfectly together. But really, as we sit down and wind through these conversations, you see some very strong common threads of how they're very closely interconnected. So, which teases up to our next guest, our cleanup hitter. Up next today on Supply Chain Now Radio, we welcome Linda Goetz, president of the Blockchain Chamber of Commerce. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning. It's a wonderful pleasure to be here.
Well, glad you're here. You're representing a very hot technology, hot community, hot aspect of the supply chain world. So on that note, tell us what is for your layman out there that maybe hasn't investigated the B word and what it is. Tell us, what is blockchain?
I think I'm going to use your peanut butter and jelly sandwich to help break this down for the listeners today. Imagine that you are at the lunch table and you have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and you give it to a friend, and then somebody else goes, "Now that's my peanut butter and jelly sandwich." And what happens? You have people around the table who saw you hand that sandwich to your friend and verify that, yes, you did give it to that friend and not to the other person that's saying, "Oh, that's my sandwich." Mm. And, you know, there might be a little bit of a kerfluffle. And then the teacher comes over and starts trying to figure out what's going on. And they say, "Okay, whose sandwich is this?" And, you know, the guy's going, that's mine. And your friends around the table are going, uh-uh. We saw him give that sandwich to, you know, this friend over here. And they validate your transaction. And so that's it's a very simplified way to look at what happens on the blockchain. Because when the teacher actually says, okay, I agree. I've gotten this corroboration. I've had the nodes verify that this truly happened, this transaction, this peanut butter sandwich was handed to this other young man or young lady, and you know, this transaction occurred. That's kind of like what happens on the blockchain. The Bitcoin blockchain being the oldest, most well known. When that verification happens, then a new block is quote minted, and the blockchain continues holding that verified transaction. And you know, five lunches from now, you can go back and you know you can actually go and check. And there's that memory, that trusted source of you know. Hey, this transaction did happen. This peanut butter sandwich was given to this other person, and nobody else can argue about it. It's immutable. It's protected
transparency, yeah. Right? Locked in. So I love the PB&J example. That's perfect. It breaks it down to my level, right? I think on a third degree level. But apply that to supply chain and moving goods to customers. How are you seeing some early adopters of blockchain use it in a means that really your customers experience and can appreciate?
Yeah, I do want to make the point that blockchain is not functioning in isolation in this supply chain process. One of the neatest combinations that I've seen is IoT. It, you know, working hand in hand with blockchain to show what's actually happening in real time as goods and services, as they are transferred over distances, you actually have the ability to use blockchain as a payment method. And as things are reaching checkpoints, you can have smart contracts in place on the blockchain that release funds. Within seconds of the IoT device registering that it has reached a certain point, the funds can be released to the originator or they can be released to the truck driver that transported that product. There's so many applications and there's organizations that are just really starting to roll these out. And Road Launch is one of the ones that I think is doing a fantastic job of it. I have no vested interest in Road Launch. I'm not trying to pitch them. I just know that they're using Stellar Lumen as a platform. That's a super fast, very inexpensive transfer of value that's done on the blockchain. And they're combining the IoT devices on trucks and allowing for that transparency and for rapid payment. So it's just... it's bringing when you say the transparency, the speed, the rapid payment.
Confidence. It brings a lot of confidence to the equation,
well,
right?
I want to work for a company that's going to pay me using blockchain and IoT because I know if I do what I'm supposed to do, then it's guaranteed that I'm going to receive what I'm supposed to as well because that's pre-written in into the contract. So it's automatic.
It seems like whenever we talk about blockchain, we're talking about transactions, we're talking about some exchange of value in this value chain, payments. I would think that banks and payment systems who are all trying to get into our wallets, where do they stand in all of this right now? I know that's dangerous. I throw you a big, tall one there. But.
Yeah, I'm happy to speak to that. I've actually spoken with over a half dozen high-level bank representatives. And interestingly, and I'm not going to name any specific banks, but there, many of the big banks have multiple, they have done a lot on their back end to use blockchain. Okay, they've done a lot, but on the consumer facing side, they have not been friendly to blockchain companies. There are very few banks that have really been friendly. And I think that's going to change over time. But one specific bank has been very negative, literally shutting down. This was in the news, the bank account of a young girl because of her father's interaction with a blockchain organization or a cryptocurrency type transaction. So those kind of things shouldn't happen.
Right.
There's unfortunately been with Bitcoin in the news, you know, you had the Silk Road, you had, you know, negatives that came out there where there was a tie-in to criminal activity and cryptocurrencies. And so what we have is a need with the Blockchain Chamber of Commerce to re-educate people, to really bring awareness of what this technology can provide to the public, the conveniences, the transparency that's there, and not, you know, it's only stupid criminals that use Bitcoin, by the way. I mean, I'm just going to throw that out there because it is.
Sounds
it
like
is
a challenge.
Trackable. Yeah. No, I mean, come on and use it. You'll be traced.
There you go.
But no, we're just working on the education, raising awareness and then facilitating the adoption.
So I mean, use Bitcoin in the bad way, because there are legit ways to use it in a positive
way. Absolutely. Right.
Yeah. That's the point.
I've owned it for over six years, and just the convenience, having a friend who, you know, lives far away saying, you know, hey, I'm going to do this for you. And I'm like, okay, I'll shoot you some Bitcoin. Literally, you know, within 10 minutes, you know, they're taken care of, and I'm not having to deal with sending a wire and paying $37 and waiting 10 days to make sure it's confirmed. I mean, all of the hangups that are inherent in the current system, I don't have to worry about with cryptocurrency.
So I want to circle back real quick. Roger, you want to make a comment?
I do. Linda, just another kind of use case for you. We're seeing in the insurance sector, insurance carriers, where they're combining IoT devices and claim payment processes. So if there's an IoT device, if there's an earthquake, they can detect that activity and literally send you a payment without anyone inspecting the property based upon those IoT devices. So so this is prolific throughout really all sectors of business.
Great point.
No, thank you for bringing that to light as well. And I know we're getting short on time, but I do want to, because I'm an educator. I would love to really, you know, break down beyond the peanut butter and jelly sandwich what blockchain is and what it can do. But for people that are just starting to learn about blockchain and wanting to understand it, there's a free downloadable app. It's called Cryptopedia, and currently it's just for Apple downloads, but it is going to be coming to Android in the next week and a half or two. Cryptopedia, it's CryptoPedia. And the wonderful guys at Renaissance Labs have provided as a free resource and are partnering with the Blockchain Chamber of Commerce to help facilitate the education that this app brings. So we're really excited to be able to share that. And there's so much more. We have actually an event on November 1st around security. And so bring your three kids.
I will.
And all their devices. But
where's that at?
It's going to be at the Blockchain Chamber, just south of Spaghetti Junction for people. Go to blockchainchamber.org.
That's in Atlanta.
Yeah,
that's right.
I'm sorry. This is a worldwide broadcast. So, if you're local, if not, we'll have a live stream and you'll be able to participate in that way as well.
If you're not, you can fly into the world's largest and best airport in the world, and we'll figure out a way to get you up to Spaghetti Junction 3 hours later, right?
Absolutely.
So blockchainchamber.org, important to note, whether it's November 1st, the event there, or is there links to the Cryptopedia, the free downloadable app, on the website as well?
We will be getting that up once it's in Android and Apple, so we want to
love it.
Pop those up together. Yeah.
And, you know, we ought to talk later. I'd love to partner with the Blockchain Chamber and maybe come up with a Blockchain 101 Lunch and Learn for our members. You know, we've got about 650, 700 members in supply chain in Atlanta, and I can tell you, a lot of them are looking for as much information on practical information on blockchain as they can get their hands on. So we'll have to chat more about that.
Absolutely.
As we wrap this up, any other tips? You mentioned you're an educator. I love that. Any other tips about folks that want to get into this field, want to become, whether it's blockchain subject matter experts, or they just want to get in the know? Any other tips that you could share with our audience?
Well, just a perspective piece. The reality is the adoption cycle that has occurred to this point with blockchain and cryptocurrency has been based on fear of missing out. And I would just encourage people to get engaged, get themselves educated, access the app, connect with the chamber, do the things to educate yourself on the front end, and then hopefully our next adoption cycle that will be mass adoption will be based on a firm foundation of educated individuals who understand private keys, understand personal responsibility with blockchain tech, and won't be fueled by the fear of missing out, which always ends up people making poor decisions and gives a bad name to the industry, which it shouldn't have if we're approaching it through proper education.
That's right. And on a organizational note, I believe in the warm-up conversation, we talked about some of your growth, the blockchain chamber's growth. It seems like you've got some chapters.
Absolutely.
Was that what you refer to them across the country?
Yeah, across the country, in Vietnam, Paris, Dubai, Morocco, Germany, Australia. So we're in kind of a massive pre-launch expansion mode, and we're very excited about what we're doing to bring education. We're basically raising awareness, facilitating adoption, and providing advocacy for consumers, businesses, and people transitioning careers into blockchain.
Love it. To learn more, visit blockchainchamber.org. Want to thank Linda Goetz, president of the Blockchain Chamber of Commerce, for joining us. Thanks so much, Linda.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Ashley, can't believe it. The hour flew past, huh?
That's what happens when you're having a great time. And Linda, that was just wonderful. I was so glad to meet you. And, you know, I have so many international cohorts around the world talking about blockchain. So let's just keep the conversation going. And just to David and Roger, just great insights. I've learned so much today. And I love, you know, when you get this old and you actually can understand and learn something and take away, it's an awesome day.
Absolutely. So as we close on a couple of things, first off, Ashley, for our first show, this new series on technology under Supply Chain Now Radio, this has been neat. Really looking forward to our next show, which it will be, you'll be on our November 9th show as well.
That's right. We're looking forward to it. We're going to have some exciting guests.
Yep. So to our audience, as we close on a couple final items here, check out our new Supply Chain Now Radio website at, you guessed it, supplychainnowradio.com. Next up on the show tomorrow, we're going to be featuring a team of supply chain leaders from Kimberly-Clark, including Sandra McQuillan, who is the Chief Supply Chain Officer for that global leader. Other upcoming events, we've got several upcoming webinars. We are conducting Supply Chain 101, which is our supply chain awareness volunteer initiative. We've been taking teams of volunteers into elementary schools for the last year. We're going to be in Newton County on October 29th and November 12th. If you're interested in that, you can check that out on the website. Also, Apex Atlanta is going to be partnering with ASQ Atlanta for a joint event on November 15th, where we're hosting Kia's Chief Administrative Officer, Stuart Countess, talking, giving us an automotive industry update. So you can find out information on that at apexatlanta.org. Ashley, what's on your radar upcoming event-wise?
I don't know.
A little bit of everything,
yeah,
right?
A little, maybe a nap later. I don't know. It's been a big week.
It has been a big week. It's been a big couple weeks with between the summit, more shows, new series, webinars, industry events, you name it. A lot of stuff going on here in the hashtag Supply Chain City.
My company does have a new LinkedIn page, so you can go there and find us on LinkedIn, Vision Media Group, LLC. Vision, please follow us.
And I love the logo. Very unique logo. You can check Vision Media Group on LinkedIn, on Facebook, on Twitter, Instagram.
Vision Chick on Twitter, and we focus on branding with knowledge and creativity. So we're trying to use that pineal gland.
Love it.
Yeah, intuition.
I might be missing that gland. I don't know. But as we close out, thank you to our sponsors, Apex Atlanta and Talent Stream. Talent Stream is a WeBank certified recruiting and staffing firm that specializes in helping organizations find top talent in the engineering, manufacturing, and supply chain space. For more information about Apex, check us out at apexatlanta.org. Talent Stream is at talentstreamstaffing.com. Of course, you can always shoot, if you have any questions on what you heard today, shoot us an email at info@apexatlanta.org. We'll get you connected with our guests or try to answer your question the best we can. So I want to thank our guest, Roger Duncan with Risk Connect. You can learn more at riskconnect.com. David Landsman with SAP Ariba. You can check out Ariba.com, but more importantly, check out AribaDiscovery.com if you want a good free resource there. And Linda Getz, president of the Blockchain Chamber of Commerce. You can learn more at blockchainchamber.org. Ashley, I believe that's a wrap. Thanks so much for your partnership.
Great day.